Hey y'all, it's me, Dr. Smeeter, on Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Smeeter, sex gynecologist, menopause specialist in Chicago. And this podcast is usually a place where we talk about things that people are thinking, but they might not say out loud. So today's episode, I have a very special guest, months and months in the making, two busy women in life. You can never get together. But we want to be able to laugh about things and be entertained and enjoy and understand each other's journeys. So sometimes, you know, we have to laugh or else we'll cry in perimenopause. So I feel like this has been when I found Beth Crosby on Instagram, it was like such a joy because, okay, first of all, I didn't know all the things she'd already done, but just like it's just so fucking so hilarious that it's like, just like to bring entertainment to so many aspects of midlife, of motherhood, of hormones, of like trying to balance everything. So hopefully this will be a very fun, entertaining, and, you know, informative podcast. So I want to introduce Beth Crosby, also known as the Garbage Mom, which we're going to talk about is also, who is an actor, a content creator, a writer. She's hilarious. She is one of the most honest voices on the internet when it comes to motherhood and midlife. No jokes aside. I mean, all jokes aside, just very good entertainment and just some compelling things that she talks about. So today we're going to talk about mental load and invisible labor and sort of identity shifts in midlife and how we're navigating it and your own perimenopause journey if you want to talk about it. So thanks so much, Beth, for being on today.
I feel so great. I mean, I literally just like cleaned the bathroom. So like I love going from that to like hearing I mean, thank you so much. That was the best intro ever.
I telling her before offline, I was like, I did the IMDb thing to figure out where else Beth is. And she had been a new girl, you know, like I'm like new girl obsessed. Like I love the whole gang. I love Schmidt and Jess and all of you.
It was so fun. And that episode, and we shot like two blocks away from my house, up like at some bar. Mm-hmm. It was really, really fun. That was such a great...
The park, right? The Fancy Man. I think it was... Yeah, it's called The Fancy Man.
Yeah. It was great. It was so fun.
I'll link where it is, you know, so you guys can go back and have some hilarious fun.
That was pre-baby. Before motherhood. You know how you have two different lives?
Yeah, yep. Totally two different lives. Yeah. Well, let's start with, you know, like, I'm Gyno Girl on Instagram. I like a good backstory. Like, I want to hear your backstory. Like, what brought you into acting? And then what brought you into content creation? And then what brought you into perimenopause? I want to hear all of it. I mean, I know what brought you into perimenopause. Your ovaries.
Pork and juice or some non-alcoholic drink. Like, I can barely drink these days thanks to perimenopause. Yeah. I always was an actor my whole life. I grew up dancing. I was in competitive dance. Like, I would be in the studio, like, 25 hours a week, like, dancing. It really saved me, I feel like, as a kid. You know, my parents were divorcing and I was like almost heading in a wrong direction with the wrong crowd, but then like found dance and then drama in high school, found like the weirdos and they were like my, you know, they became
brilliant weirdos.
Yeah. I mean, they're all like, yeah, they're great. I still have friends with them. And then I ended up going to Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh and got my BFA in musical theater. And then, so I am a singer and I moved to New York for a while. But then I really wanted to focus on comedy. So I moved to LA and I found a company called the Groundlings Theater, which is like a sketch comedy theater out here. And like Kristen Wiig came out of it, Will Ferrell.
Yes.
Just so many huge, incredible names. And I was there. I was in their program and then I was in their company, their Sunday company. And it was like boot comedy boot camp. Like, I feel like I got a master's degree there. Like,
I got it. Yeah.
And I got to screen test for SNL. They flew me out to audition screen test for Saturday Night Live. And I did the whole thing like on the stage.
Yeah.
I blacked out. I mean, I don't even remember my audition because
I heard really scary to be in front of, you know, the crew and Lorne Michaels and the whole thing.
Yep, Lorne Michaels. And it was
like poker face the whole time.
Yeah, you couldn't really see it, thankfully, because they have it like you're doing a live show. I think they really try to like intimidate you. Yeah. They had us waiting in the dressing room for like hours. And then they were like, okay, you're on. And then you go down. I had my little bag of like wigs for my characters. Like,
I love it.
And then you get on stage and they go, okay, in 3, 2, 1. And then the lights come on and a camera comes, swings in right in front of your face. And you have 5 minutes to do your best material.
Oh, 5 minutes. That's it, huh?
Around 5 minutes. Yeah. Cool. So my audition is stored somewhere at 30 Rock because I keep all the other stuff. I didn't get the job, obviously, which, you know, looking back, I was in my 20s. Like, I don't think I could have handled it, you know? Like,
it's intense.
It wouldn't have been intense. Yeah. But that was like a pinch me moment. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would get to do that. So that happened. And anywho, I ended up working with lots of different comedy theaters out here and working in film and TV. And anyways, cut to 2020, the pandemic happened. My industry shut down completely. What about yours? Did your shut down?
I'm in private practice, so it did affect us because we're a small business, you know. So I had to pivot and go back to the hospital.
Oh my god!
You know, but then you know, like it was challenging. We did a lot. That's how televisits, you know, became sort of like the thing, right? So
thank God for televisits, because
I
don't like to leave my house, you know. So it's great.
So you started content creating during the pandemic?
During the pandemic, because my business shut down, and my daughter was 4, and I was absolutely losing my mind. I was like, jump out this window. I have no work, no creative outlet. I love being a mom. It's like, it is the best thing that ever happened to me in my entire life. But
there's always a but.
We were shut in our whole place, my husband, me, and my daughter.
Yeah.
So anyways, I just started making content creation under the guise of Garbage Mom. And
how did you come up with that one, Garbage Mom?
Well,
I love it.
I had a couple names. My first name was, it was going to be called a cluster feed. Kind of like, you know, motherhood is a cluster, you know, but cluster feed as in breastfeeding and all that. But I was deep in like baby time at that point. I was coming up with that idea. Yeah. But, you know, Garbage Mom kind of stood out because I was like, I didn't relate to these moms that were making content at the time, where it was very like, come with me as I get ready to take my little baby, whatever. You know, I was like, literally no pants, struggling. Like, I had postpartum. I couldn't breastfeed the way I wanted to. I wasn't making it. I mean, I was a mess. And
holy, I feel that.
Yeah. And I was like, so Garbage Mom to me kind of was like, you know, I'm very self-deprecating, but also like that it's like a positive thing. It's okay. Yeah. This is real. Like this, to be a good mom, you don't have to be perfect, and you're not going to be perfect, you know?
Of course. I love it, actually. And I think what's so interesting is like, you know, I was a practicing OBGYN by the first time I had a baby, and you know, I was like, you know, 10 years into being an attending or something. I don't know. Anyway, but when I hit postpartum, and, you know, I would counsel women in postpartum and I would frown on them and I wouldn't think, but it was, and I never had like full on depression, but I definitely had the blues. I definitely felt like, is this it?
Oh, no.
Then I was in between jobs too, because I was working 100-hour weeks before, and then after I was like, I gotta find a new job. I can't work 100-hour weeks with a newborn, you know. And so I was like, oh, but I think that, like, you know, that's what really transformed my desire to do fourth trimester care specifically for my patients. Like, I was like, I gotta set up a system for fourth trimester care, because, you know, we leave people and we don't teach our residents and our OBs how to really deal with it. Like, we need to lock in on these women, you know?
You are amazing, because I wish I had had that. I mean, I had a therapist,
right?
Who's just my normal therapist,
yeah.
You know, who, when I started having thoughts, like, I had a lot of intrusive thoughts, you know, when I was postpartum. And I was like, oh my God, I thought, what if I I mean, so, like, what if I throw her out the window? Like,
yeah, that, no, but those are not uncommon. Like, don't let, like, I hear all of them. Those are intrusive, anxiety to kind of thoughts and OCD. Yeah. You know, like, you get that one. But just think, like, anytime we have hormonal fluctuation in our lives, we're susceptible to mental health changes, right? Puberty, postpartum, on medications that lower our, you know, hormones, and then perimenopause, yeah, right? Like, it's...
Absolutely. I mean, that's so... It's like, looking back, I know that, but, like, no one... at this was... My daughter's 9 now, so at the time, no one prepared me for anything. No. In fact, I was on an antidepressant just before, like, when I got pregnant. Stuff, and the doctors were like, we don't know if you should stay on it.
Yeah.
Pregnancy. And I'm like, and I was like, I'm having full panic attacks. And they were like, just like breathe. And it's like,
right,
there's no, there's no discussion of like, how are you? You need to be like, let's figure you out. And,
yeah,
and then they just send, after you have the baby, they send you home and they're like, have fun. And you're like,
don't have sex, by the way.
And have sex.
Don't have sex.
Oh yeah. Don't have sex. Right. Don't have, for 6 weeks. Yeah. Also, people that, like, I don't understand this. People that get pregnant, like, literally 6 weeks after having a baby, like, God bless them. But how? I did not want anyone to go near that, like, car crash.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, literally.
Literally. Car crash.
Your body feels...
Oh, I'm on the cars back together, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And not just there, just, like, your... I don't feel like my body was, like, mine for, like, a year.
For a year. Yes. Yeah. That's why I tell people, I was like, wait for a year before you
find your
baby. Don't you think? It's like, I think it's like a postpartum year.
Absolutely. And
I'm 8 years postpartum right now.
Yeah. How are, and isn't it weird? Like, your body was kind of yours a year after, but for me, it wasn't until, and this is insane, I only have one, but year 8, where I had space to go, oh, what do I want to do now again?
Yeah.
You know, like, or what I... Oh, I feel like I can kind of look at my life more. You know, I don't know. It took me that long. And no one ever tells you the timeline.
Of course. Yeah.
They just say.
No, and it's true. And so then tell me, like, you know, because you started making some, like, perimenopausal content over the last, what, 2 years or so, maybe? 4 years?
Yeah. Yeah, 2 or 3 years. You know, I just kind of make content about what I know.
Yeah.
And as I started experiencing these symptoms, just started, I don't know, making content about it. And around the same time that people really started to talk about it online.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so glad we live, or I'm going through perimenopause during a time where people are talking about it. Like, my mom is no longer with us, but for sure, no one was talking about this with her, you know, like,
yeah.
And she never talked about it with me ever.
Forget it. And I feel like it's really a generational, like, I do think Gen X is like, no, fuck this. I'm not going through it. Right? What does that mean? We were 30 at age 10 and we're still 30 at age 50.
I feel totally. I'm like, I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, that's not who I am. I look like that. What? Oh, it's so sad. It's so disappointing. Yes, I feel like Gen Xers are kind of the first generation to just say, you know, we're not doing that anymore. You know, like, I feel like I'll speak for myself and my friends, you know, we're the first generation that's kind of like been in therapy for a long period of time, you know, and we're like,
kind of by boomers, you kind of have to do it.
Oh my God. Oh yeah. Therapy. What is that? Like, they don't like, please. They don't have time. We can't afford it. We don't have time. Like, they don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But me, thankfully, I found therapy, like, kind of right after college. And I've been basically in and out, like, mostly in since then. And I don't know how people do life, you know, without it for me. And I feel like we're kind of actively working on breaking generational, like, trauma as we raise our own kids. Like, I'm trying to be very conscious and, like, not pass down whatever toxic things were.
It's hard.
Coming my way.
It's hard because you want to become like your mom in some ways.
I know. I mean,
sometimes I'm yelling at them and I'm like, oh, this is just like my mom.
100%. Oh, no, it's not perfect at all.
Yeah.
Like, my daughter will
be talking about me in therapy someday, right? Like,
but hopefully just different issues. Like,
my mom is garbage mom, okay? So just imagine what I...
She'll be like, I had to grow up with a mom talking about perimenopause on the internet. It was awful. Yeah, it'll be... Who knows? But yeah, we're like, fuck it. We're not, I don't know. My friends that are Gen X are just like, yeah, we talk about it now, you know, and we want to, support each other, through it, you know, cause it can be really scary. And I feel like the thing, well, you hear about it probably a lot, but I feel like even on the internet, we don't talk about how scary it can feel.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, what do you think your first symptoms were?
You know what? Honestly, my first symptom was more anxiety.
Yes, I was going to say, I was going to bet on that because I think mental health concerns we're seeing now more and more frequently are the first signs of perimenopause. And so, yeah, more and more we're seeing that. And I think if you were predisposed to it in postpartum or any other areas of time, but 9 times out of 10, that's what I see in my office. Anxiety. I can't fly all of a sudden. I can't drive. I don't feel good about this. I'm ruminating in the middle of the night. You know, like the same thing.
Oh my God, that's like 100%. That's so interesting. See, I didn't even realize you talked about whatever's happening in pregnancy. You know, I had a lot of postpartum anxiety and rumination, I think, because I had trouble breastfeeding and that became my... You know, like obsession in a weird way where I was like, I'm a terrible mother. I'm a failure as a woman. I mean, all these like wild things that now I go,
yeah,
you needed some help. That's that's not reality. You're a great mom. If you can't breastfeed,
that's not you,
you know?
Exactly.
And, but yeah, it was my anxiety and it actually took, you know, I've always struggled with anxiety, always, but it took my husband. He finally sat me down and was like, I love you. Something's going on.
Yeah.
I'm worried about you.
Yeah. No, that's good. Yeah, no, that's good that he, you know, I think when your spouses are in tune with it, it's very helpful because then sometimes you don't even know you're going through it by yourself. And really, it's, you know, it affects everyone around you too. Because I feel like women kind of hold the fort together. They're like bringing it all in, holding it together. So...
Totally. And we're really good. Well, I feel like I'm really good at like masking.
Yeah.
You know, like, cause like, what's the alternative? You're too anxious so you don't show up for softball practice or to your job. No, you go everywhere. You do everything. You have to.
You have to. Yeah.
So let me just put like, I'll take care of it. And then, but then where do you go with that? Like,
either you're not sleeping and then you're not doing all the things. Yeah.
Or like, I'm snapping at my husband or I'm like quietly rocking in the corner, you know, like, babe, something's going on.
I mean, how do you think it's affected? Like, you know, like, I mean, I think about like the entertainment industry and like actors and dancers and singers, like, so it's really, you know, obviously like I became a doctor and it was hard, but sometimes I look at that aspect and think how hard that is. It's really hard. Like that's, you know, I think that, I've had to do a couple things where I had to memorize segments or, you know, I had to replay, you know, I was doing some videos for, you know, whatever, different apps or whatever. And, you know, you have all the people come in and it's like, you have to keep recording until it gets it right. And, you know, those days become long and you're like, dang, like this 30 minute segment just became 10 hours, like out of nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. Let's be clear. We're not doing what you do. Okay. We're not like, we're not saving lives. Okay. But no, at all. So I'm sure you're fine. But, I think the part that is hard for like when you're going through perimenopause or postpartum is this career that I've chosen is so unstable. There's no stability.
Right.
Even like people that are A-listers are like, you're literally like only as good as your last job.
Yeah.
And when is your next job to keep your health insurance coming to whatever, pay all the people you have and whatever. Yeah. And I mean, I don't even know about my auditions until the night before, you know? And so it's hard to even set a regular schedule, which is really good if you're struggling with anxiety is to have a regular, you know, a normal life.
Well, I was just looking at, there was some feed about the guy that used to play Elvin on The Cosby Show. What's his name? God, I'm forgetting now. See, Perry Menopause is at it again. Now he's got a role in The Pit. Like, and like 10 years ago, he was at Trader Joe's, like,
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've seen, yes. It's, and also in our industry right now, not to be a downer, but it's crashing and burning at this moment with everything from strikes that happened to the mergers with these studios, AI. Netflix is filming in Los Angeles anymore. And so even the heavy hitters of my friends that work all the time are not working. So, but add that to like going through perimenopause while my whole industry is crashing. So I will say I'm very glad I found content creation, because I do feel like that is something I have at least some control over, you know?
No, it's so true. And I think, you know, people don't recognize the impact. I don't know if you watched Scrubs, but it was like the show that got me through residency and med school and everything. And so there was an episode last night where Carla was going through perimenopause, and you should watch it. Oh my God, it was so compelling, because she was like, I'm just not the same. I can't do what I used to do. And she was having a hot flash, and they like put her on fire.
Oh my God, I loved it yesterday.
It was really
okay.
Good.
I am gonna watch it. Beth, you know what? So this is so like LA. I took a prenatal yoga class with that actress one time.
Oh, the one that plays Carla.
I guess her and I were pregnant at the same time, but
She's awesome. Yeah.
She's
going through menopause, and she was having trouble. And so then like JD decided to reduce the number of patients that she sees. And then initially she was really pissed off. And then she was like, thank you, because it is too much for me right now. And But you don't recognize the toll that it has.
That's the thing. I feel like, well, actually there's another show that your friends and neighbors is up there.
I saw your post yesterday.
If I wasn't working with them, they have a full perimenopause storyline. It goes through the whole season, apparently. Okay. And they talk about it, and it's been so powerful, like for me, like, I don't know, I almost got weepy, which is so weird, which is also perimenopause. But like seeing women talk about this as their real storyline, like we're still so behind. We're not seeing it nearly as much as we really, I feel like, should. Hopefully in the next 5 years, that'll change. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see a whole show just about women my age and older that look like me and that are diverse going through what we're going through, you know, because there's an audience for it.
We had it when we were growing up, the Golden Girls. Golden Girls reboot. But let's not call it the Golden Girls. Let's call it like
a modern Golden Girls. 100%. By the way, they were like, a few of them were like, I'm in my late 40s. We're like in their early 40s.
I know.
It's
great. Their faces look good. They just had the hairstyles of like older women back then, you know?
No, that's true. And also they were doing all the things everyone. I haven't done shit to my face, but a lot of people do. But they on TV do. So they hadn't done all that stuff. They look like normal people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just funny because like I do this talk about, you know, like menopausal stuff. And I always put up the meme like where J-Lo, this is J-Lo at age 50. And this is Rose. What's her name? The one that was always Deborah. What's her first name? Blanche.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, this
that's
is both
funny.
Me.
This is J-Lo.
I mean, that's crazy. Right? I don't know. It's not funny. But it's like reclaiming, you know, your, I don't know. It's like not going down like that. You know, it's like people are just like, I'm not going to just be put on the side anymore and whatever.
Absolutely. Like, I've been finding myself following, because I'm in my late 40s, as I'm inching closer to being 50, like looking at these, I don't know how I got on this algorithm. I'm so glad that I am. But of these women that are over 50, 50s and 60s that are like
badass. Like they're the way they dress incredible. They're like crazy amazing. They've embraced their gray or whatever. And they're so like loud and strong and like they're not going away. And I don't know, being Gen X, you know, I don't know. My idea of what like 50 would be, you always think it's like some grandma or something, you know?
I know. Yeah.
And then I have to remind myself fucking J-Lo is what? She's like 55?
Yeah, exactly.
I need to change that in my own brain, you know? Because I'm not going away, you know? Like,
The truth is, like, I feel like in a lot of non-Western societies, like, the aging population is looked at differently. Like, they are adored. They are rock stars. In Japan, like, the generations ahead are like rock stars. In some cultures, like, you're the matriarch of your family when you hit menopause and like you make all the decisions, you know, like, and so I feel like because we're so individualistic and we're so, I don't know, you know, we don't consider the collective of the people, why we have so many, you know, of our family members and women in nursing homes that don't, you know, get. So I just feel like it's the way we look at aging people in America. And I think it's changing. It's totally changing. People don't want to be the people that are, can't think and they pee on themselves and they can't move, you know? It's like,
Do you think I hope it's changing because I, you know, I had to see my mom go, she had to go to different skilled nursing facilities for her because of her condition.
Yeah.
And then, and
full time care, one way or another, right?
Full time care. And I realized, you know, we in America, we don't at the time, that was like 9 years ago, care about our elders. We just don't. Like, if you're not crazy rich, good luck to you if you get sick kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, or if you don't have
family. Facilities are expensive too. They're like $6,000, $7,000 a month.
Oh, the ones out here were like $8,000 to $15,000 a month.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking on the low end, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nuts. And like, or what if you're old and you don't have a family? Like,
yeah.
Take care of you, you know? But I hope that's changing. But I wonder, and I wonder what you think. Do you think our ideals of what like we should look like and how we should be acting as women as we get older are changing? Or do you think with the introduction of like Ozempic again and all this plastic surgery?
I know. Yeah, you're right, actually. It's not because like people, it is kind of like heroin chic again, you know?
Yeah, it is.
And so, I mean, I think legitimately the medications are phenomenal for so many reasons, for so many people who, you know, really need the additional support. But obviously there are people that, you know, maybe aren't using it appropriately. But I do think the midlife woman, when she gets that midsection visceral fat, you know, oftentimes try everything in the world and nothing really gets them over the hump of you know.
Yeah.
And you know, that is a dangerous fat. That's an inflammatory fat. That is sort of like what we think of the precursors to diabetes and heart disease and all these things. So you know, thinking about your cardiovascular health and profile, I think it is something that, you know, has to be addressed to some capacity because, you know, heart disease is still the number one killer in women. So we have to really work for that. But.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe because I live in LA, I'm seeing so many people like that don't need it, that are like, you know, like,
yeah,
a full trend, you know?
In Chicago too. So it's like pretty common. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. And also I feel like the plastic surgery is become so normalized, which I'm like, do you. That never makes you happy.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like I'm like rebelling as a woman. Yeah. I'm done.
No.
I don't have any now. I've gotten it in the past.
Yeah.
If I got some now, it would look crazy because, like, I'm way past Botox. You know, I'm like,
no, you're never too old for Botox.
Never too old for Botox. Oh, giggle.
Stop. No, I agree with you. And I have a friend who's a plastic surgeon in Orange County, actually. And she tells me, though, like, that she has, like, young, you know, 20 something year olds that want to look like their filters, you know, like, so
oh, God.
It's kind of like, you know, to some degree, it's like, you know, you're not accepting. I mean, and think about it, like we grew up with one picture a year at the school or whatever. And, you know, if you'd have to like get them Polaroided or, you know, I have to go pick them up. These people just look at, I see my kids sometimes and they're like, oh, you know,
no.
I'm well, dude.
I grew up in front of mirrors because I was a dancer.
Right.
And no, it led to full eating disorder. Like
of course.
I have like 20, I think like 23 years or something recovery from it, but it was, and so I think I get worried about that for our young kids coming up, you know, because like, I'm sick of looking at myself all goddamn day while I'm working, shooting on the, you know, I can't imagine growing up as
Agreed. And what kind of dances did you do, by the way?
Oh, I did ballet, jazz, and tap, and then ended up working professionally in musicals. So tapping and dancing and stuff like that in musicals.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder, I always, because I have a lot of dancers I take care of with pelvic floor issues and like, you know, all the things. And so I always wonder, like, because of the way you have to, you know, keep your posture and how, you know, and then on top of that, with the anxiety and the clenching of the jaw and the clenching of the pelvis, people get like a lot of pelvic floor dysfunction because of it, right? Sexual pain, bowel, bladder dysfunction, they get all the things. And so I always like, whenever that's part of what I do in my assessment is try to understand where they came from in terms of athleticism. Because I, you know, there's a lot of ex-athletes, a lot of ex-dancers that have some of these recurrent issues that we see. Interesting.
My God, that's fascinating. I've never had a doctor bring that up to me when I've talked about any kind of perimenopause or like, you know, anything. So that's either you're a good doctor showing off over there. Like that's, your patients are lucky.
Well, I think that like, you know, the awareness that you're bringing, we did something cool together with, Perry community. Remember when Shannon Chavez, actually, who I interviewed her as well on my podcast, the wonderful therapist. Yeah. And so I, you know, whatever you want to talk about with regard to this, but don't you find that midlife has been a real crazy experience for your like sexual function and relationships and all the things, right? Like it's.
I know
because you write a lot of good content about it. So
I mean,
that's the best content, don't you think?
I mean, look, I find anytime I am very honest is what it resonates. And that's scary too. Like, for me, it can be scary to be really vulnerable out and put yourself out there like that. Yeah. Like, because I'm like, oh my God, everyone's going to think whatever. And, but then I, as a someone who watches, when I see someone really be honest, I'm so relieved and grateful because I, you know, it just really, you feel like you're alone or like I suddenly had like, no sex drive. I was like, okay, just no, I don't never have to be touched again. Like, let's
just, you know, this break it.
We did it, you know? and that's not okay. It's not what I want, you know? It's not okay, you know? Yeah. And so I've tried testosterone and also like just the vaginal estrogen on top of I have the patch and progesterone. I think the vaginal estrogen is what kind of has helped, and then also just talking about it, like we talk about it, and in couples, we're in couples therapy, you know. And yeah, but again, no one prepared me for that, you know. No one prepared me for like you're just gonna feel like a stranger in your body.
I think it's even learning the word. I had a patient tell me the other day, because I'm always worried of AI and ChatGPT and like, you know, the biases that are inherent in some of these systems that are getting thrown out there. But it was so interesting because she told me that like using her, you know, chat box gave her language that she never knew how to speak to. Like, so she came in with all these things and she was like, I just never knew the right language. And so it was like really this. And I think, you know, this person happens to be a little neurodivergent. So I think it gave her language that she couldn't otherwise communicate. So it made me think like, are people, if they use it this way, would it help and enhance their, you know, experience with their clinician? And I think it probably could. But I think it's interesting because this normalization that we're doing online, and I think, you know, the discussions around it, I think really have been transformative for patients. Like, you know, even when you did the whole incontinence spiel and you got all the responses, because everyone's like, yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I wasn't lying when I said, oh, my God. We were at Muir Woods, which is this famous redwood forest in San Francisco. Yeah. It's like gorgeous tourist.
Love it.
And out of, and I laughed and literally peed my pants. Like,
I'm surprised it took you this long to figure, because I can't jump worth a damn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was no warning that, like, it just happened. I was like, oh, my God. And then, so, yeah, I mean, I'm sharing about that online because I really had to, like, suck it up and go, okay, I'm going to put this out there.
Yeah.
That many women were like, oh, my God, yes, I can't. Yeah. Like you said, go to trampoline or, like, whatever, you know.
Jumping jacks or anything.
And then there's solutions for that. There's actual things you could do to help that and products and all that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So one of the other things that you talk about, and so I want to get your update, because you did this whole spiel where you're like, there's going to be a perimenopause. What if we do a perimenopalooza or something like that?
Yeah.
Tell me about how you came up with that and where we're at. Is there going to be a perimenopalooza?
Well, okay. We're working on it. We're working on it for hopefully 27, because you have to build these things, you know, and we're actually in the funding stage right now. And I met with,
I mean, it was a joke initially, right?
Okay, so I made this thing, literally, I was lying in bed and like watching some show. And I was like, oh yeah, I have this idea. I was like, oh, this would be, oh my God, this would be my dream. I just put all my, like my favorite dream artists that I feel like were from the 90s.
Yeah.
That women now, that the music that we came of age to. And now, as we're coming of age in a different way in perimenopause, that music, for me at least, relates in a way. It resonates in the same way it did when I was a teenager coming up with that music.
Yeah.
Like Atlantis.
Music can really bring you people together, and it's so compelling, the effect of music on people.
100%. And hearing what their lyrics resonate in a different way, the strength of these women, it's an all female lineup, except at the end, I did put Rage Against the Machine. Yeah. They'll never come and do it. Maybe Tom Morello might come, because his mom's in menopause, like, and he's honestly, it would be the most punk rock thing they could do would be to come play this show.
Yeah.
But I put all my dream artists, female artists, and like booths we can have there, and like, you know, and then I put it up online and it went crazy viral. Like Alanis commented, Tracy Bonham,
I was like, whoa, I'm dead here. Can't believe
I had an out-of-body experience, okay? Like, she was my... I've been in a relationship with Alanis Morissette for 30 years, one-sided. Okay. And then for her... But before that, she had been following me before that post. I remember the day I was on that trip in San Francisco, and I was getting coffee with my daughter and my husband, and I was looking at my Instagram, and it said, Alanis Morissette followed you. And I said, I said to my husband and daughter, I'm like, I'm going over there for 20 minutes. I need to just be alone for 20. And he goes, what happened? I go, Alanis Morissette just followed me. And he goes, okay, just go over there. It's okay. He got it. Cause he knows me. Like, I still have chills thinking about it. But I think the reason why she followed me, I think, is because I was making some perimenopause content. And in her show, I went to her stage show last year in Vegas. She had a residency. And she talked about perimenopause. Nice. And when she did, the roof blew off the house. Like, the women went crazy. And I was like, if we have this festival, the women will come and they will go crazy, you know, over these, like, if we, I want it to just be this punk rock.
Love it.
Yeah. So anyways, we're actually working on that with all these, like, people from the industry started reaching out, and brands have been reaching out, and we have an attorney, and we're getting funding now, and I've met with, I've personally met with.
I want to be.
Are you kidding? No, you have to be. The goal is that we have a little place where you can come, like a stage, so you can do your podcast if you want, or you can make content there, or you could, we can have a little talk with you, like, because we want to have, we want to have industry experts come as well, like doctors. Mm-hmm. We want it to be helpful and informative as well.
We'll get that menopause group that, you know, we'll get together.
Yes. Yes. but yeah, and then I've had a couple of the people that are on the poster reach out to me, and I can't, I'm the tween in me is like throwing up, like from excitement. Okay. So anyways, that's kind of where we're at right now. But trust me, as soon as we can announce like whatever, I'll be making posts about it. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Cause I mean, you just think about the impact that musicians have on people's lives. Like when Prince died or George, I remember the day George Michael died, I was so depressed. I was like, oh my God, what? Yes.
I remember the day. You know, I have obviously mixed feelings about him, but Michael Jackson died. I was working, and someone in the street ran by and was like, "Michael Jackson died!" Like, just screamed. Like,
yeah.
I remember where I was when I found out that he had.
Mm-hmm. I do too. I can see myself in the office. Like, it was June 2000. Like, I totally remember.
That's so crazy. Yeah. Kind of like, yeah.
I mean, he made Thriller. Yeah.
I mean, look, Thriller is embedded in our memory forever.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's the new movie's coming out, apparently, the Michael Jackson movie, because his nephew is playing him.
Oh, really? Oh,
I just saw something on it in Good Morning America yesterday.
His nephew is playing
him. Yeah. Yeah. Jermaine Jackson's son.
I mean, they're talented, so I'm sure the kid will be good, you know?
He said that he, like, learned these dances in such a way to the point where he would, like, his feet would bleed from so much, like, you know.
Yeah.
He wanted to be just, you know?
That would be an impossible role to play. That would be so hard.
I know. And then apparently his grandma said at one point when she saw some clips, like, she couldn't tell the difference between him and Michael.
Oh my God.
It must be pretty good.
Crazy. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I've always been a Janet fan.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, she is.
Lucky on the lineup.
Oh my God. No, she's my dream. Like, that, like, we're trying to dream big. So I'm like, we could put an offer to her.
Let's put it out in the atmosphere.
Literally. Let's do it. Like, she had twins at 50.
This is crazy, right? I know.
That's insane. I can't imagine. I can't imagine. And looking the way she looks, talk about J-Lo. I mean, look at Janet.
Janet Jackson, I know. Miss Jackson, if you're nasty. Do you feel like you are in the system and trying to get help? Have you felt like the, you know, medical gaslighting thing that happens to so many women? Because, you know, this is something that I like to talk about and like to raise awareness to other clinicians about. And so, like, you know, getting seen and getting told that this is all in your head, or, you know, not getting the correct diagnoses. Did that happen to you when you started?
Yeah. Yes. And actually, it happened in a kind of a different way. I started around the same time I started perimenopause, maybe a year or two before, needing iron infusions every year because my ferritin was dropping. And I was getting horrible restless leg syndrome, debilitating. And by the way, no doctor could put two and two together. I had to find out, it's my ferritin that's probably the issue.
Oh, so wow.
I had to ask specifically, will you test my ferritin? They were like,
people lose a lot of hair with their ferritin going down too.
Okay. I was getting heart palpitations. I was almost passing out when I was standing up. Trouble breathing. I was pale as a ghost. And the doctor was like, oh, yeah. Well, as long as you keep getting your period, you're going to need these iron infusions. And I was like, this is like
and Los Angeles train, like high,
yeah,
well, doctor. And I was like, okay. So for like 3 years, I got iron infusions every year. It wasn't until I saw a GI doctor and told him about, oh yeah, I get these iron infusions. And he was like, let's get an endoscopy.
Yeah.
Long story short, I had celiac.
I was going to say celiac.
Girl.
Yeah.
Doctor, I have, my ferritin was dropping year after year after year, iron infusions. And he just told me it's because of my period.
Oh my God. See, this is like, you're someone that has a legitimate, you can't have the gluten. The gluten is dangerous for you.
Well, and this was, I was diagnosed a year ago and I cannot tell you how much better I feel now. And I had my iron just checked like a month ago. It hasn't dropped at all. Like my body is able to absorb nutrients now, you know, I can hold on to the actual nutrients that I eat. So my body is healing itself. But the doctor was like, oh, it's your period.
Frustrating. I'm like, what's going on in LA? They didn't even put all that together. Like,
I mean, I should have called you. I knew not about you. I'm calling you from now on.
I do have a California.
I would say the ferritin, like, is something I feel like people don't talk about. Like,
yeah, I agree with you. But it's one of the things that we standardly are, you know, are encouraging people to check now, and especially in this transition. Because a lot of times people do the CBC where they're looking at your hemoglobin hematocrit, not realizing that, you know, that it can still be affected, right? So,
yeah, it was a huge, yeah. So anyways, I always tell, now I'm telling women, check your ferritin. I tell them that, and I tell them freeze your eggs. I tell young ladies when I see, I'm the crazy lady that if I meet like a young girl, I'm like, God, we can always freeze your eggs. They're like,
just do it. We didn't have that growing up. You can do it.
Dude, I mean, what do you say? Like,
I would have frozen. You know, when I was a resident, they had I think he was from Italy. We had a grand rounds. I remember hearing about this new egg freezing that was coming up on the pipeline. You know, as a resident, I was like, what, 24, 25, something like that. And I was like, oh man, this is great. Cause I hadn't met my husband by then. And, you know, a lot of people had already been married. And I was like, oh man, I don't know when I'm going to have a baby. I wish I could freeze my eggs. So I was, remember asking him, he's like, yeah, but like, you might not get a live birth yet. So, you know, just hang on. And so it wasn't something that was one of the options at that time, you know, which is, but now I encourage it. I have, you know, great REI doctors that I work with. And I'm just like, go down the street and get it done. And a lot of the companies are now encouraging it, right? Like Google, some of these other companies are paying for it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because they don't want their employees to get pregnant.
God, do it later. We don't want you to be a mother.
No one else is paying. We're not worried about me anymore.
Exactly. Well, I mean, thank God though. Yeah, it wasn't until about a year ago that my insurance, SAG-AFTRA insurance.
Yeah.
They had to do IVF coverage. So, because I had secondary infertility. We only had one kid.
Yeah.
And when I was doing it, I had to pay all out of pocket. I mean, as you know, how expensive all that is. That's why we stopped, because we tried a couple and we're like, we can't
keep going.
Like, no broke doing it.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. But thankfully now, you know, insurance companies are becoming, you know, they're making it mandatory that they have to cover at least some of it. So
some of, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so much fun, Beth, garbage mom.
No, how about you? I should have brought my list of like my own medical concerns and taking advantage of this hour.
Text me offline. I'll send you my number if you can.
Girl, you're gonna regret it. I'm about to be texting.
No, seriously. This has been fun. I love your content. I love being like, I mean, truly, like, you know, when it comes to people, when we do our job and we come home, like my husband always jokes that the TV is his best friend, because that's what helps him escape and like, you know, decompresses. So like the work that is done in Hollywood and the industry, like it's, you know, it's transformative too. You know, like people really do look to escape. They look to feel better. They look to, you know, all the things. Through entertainment. So entertainment's an important aspect of our existence, I would say.
Well, thank you. I mean, thank you so much. We're not doing what you do, but it is fun to go escape for a minute. You know, I have been escaping myself with so many shows.
I love going to comedy shows. Like, that's the one thing I always go out for. If I have a good comedian coming through, I'm going to that comedy show. That's what we do. Like, we go to one a month at least, you know? So, like,
you think, do you ever go to, I met my husband at Second City. Do you ever go to Second City?
Yeah.
Chicago. Yeah. I did shows there and
Yeah.
You're going to find.
Oh, sure. You should start, what is it calling? Go on tour.
Listen, it's still my grim. I want to do a stage show about midlife and perimenopause, like a comedy show, and like singing. So trust me, it's on my to-do list.
I can't wait. I can't include you in Chicago, and I'll have you at my
office. Yeah. Second City, whenever you want to
put it into existence. We're going to put it into existence. The Garbage Mom comedy show slash,
The Garbage Mom. We want to have comedians that. Perimenopause and Palooza too. So like, great. That's the goal. So
awesome. Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait for this to happen.
I know. You're same.
First, everyone. No, not first, but maybe second.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, this is fun, Beth. I'll email you though. You can ask me your questions offline.
Thank you so much. And thank you for everything you do. Your podcast is amazing. The work you're doing, it is so important. And I do have women all the time that are like, where do I go? Who do I talk to? And so I, if you don't mind, like me passing your info along.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
I love it. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks so much. Well, this has been fun. Thanks everyone for listening to Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm Dr. Sabina Ron, Gyno Girl. Remember, I'm here to educate so you can advocate for yourself. Join me next week.
Have a second. Please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.